You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Welcome to News Out of the Box Weekend Edition on Breadbox Media. I'm Kelly Sergenis.
And I'm Joe Larza. I wanted to give you a succinct story that brings us up to date on the presidential race between Democrat Hillary Clinton and Republican Donald Trump. We're not going to dwell on politics today other than to tell you the straight truth about the current state of the race. First of all, as I've said on my daily version of News Out of the Box, don't put too much faith in the polls. There are many sampling errors being made, especially in the polls that have Clinton up by up to 10 points or more. To put it plainly, the race is neck and neck, especially now that Donald Trump has begun to focus on the issues instead of running off at the mouth, which is the hallmark of his campaign.
The LA Times Daily Tracking Poll has the race at 1 point in Clinton's favor. Polls are a snapshot in time, cautions Gary Bauer, a former Ronald Reagan staffer who now oversees the group American Values. Yet the latest polls show Hillary Clinton with big leads in several so-called battleground states, including Virginia and Colorado. Her campaign has pulled ads from both states, too, suggesting confidence in a sizable win. Political observers have also noted Trump's campaign has yet to organize campaign staffers in key battleground states, where Clinton's is organized and spending millions on TV advertising, while Trump has spent zero, the political website The Hill reported this week. Such political problems have prompted some observers to predict Trump is finished. There's no way he can defeat Clinton on November 8th. These analysts that we're reading every day are making, and I want to be polite about it, insane arguments, Bauer tells One News Now. He chalks the negativity up to media bias, which is working to discourage Trump donors and campaign volunteers, and to discourage average voters from even taking the time to vote, the longtime conservative alleges. The same Hill story quoted Representative Lou Barletta, who is helping Trump in his home state of Pennsylvania.
The polls are reaching likely voters, which would be accurate in a traditional election, he said. But this is not a traditional electorate, so you can throw out the conventional wisdom, the congressman told The Hill. Trump needs to pivot to a more controlled campaign, Bauer suggests, which the famously trash-talking candidate has done in the last several days, giving steady policy speeches on the economy, defeating radical Islam, and safety and order. But you'll hardly see anything about that in the press, Bauer says, because big media is literally blacking out Trump on these issues. It's disgusting, it's outrageous, Bauer says of the bias. And it's a hint of what the media will do from this day forward to any Republican that gets the presidential nomination.
News that insurance companies are getting out of Obamacare exchanges may leave consumers with few choices for their health insurance needs. Aetna says that it's getting out of all but four Obamacare exchanges for 2017. As reported by USA Today, Aetna is ending its Obamacare plans in 11 states: Arizona, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Kentucky, Missouri, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, and Texas. Aetna's Obamacare members in Delaware, Iowa, Nebraska, and Virginia will be unaffected.
Earlier this year, United Health announced it would be pulling out of almost all of the exchanges. This means that participants in affected states will be forced to sign up for other Obamacare plans, although consumers may want to shop around because of expected premium increases for many plans. Paul Howard of the Manhattan Institute says Aetna's announcement may not leave consumers with much to choose from. It's all going to be state and county specific, but we're going to have an increased number of counties, probably hundreds of counties, that are going to have a single insurer offered, says Howard. The Wall Street Journal reports that Aetna's move puts at least one county, Pinal County in Arizona, at risk of having no insurers that offer plans. Howard expects regulators will do their best to try to help those people. Either way, he says that's not great for competition in terms of holding costs down and ensuring that consumers have better, more affordable options available to them.
Speaking of better, more affordable options, Howard expects a lot of people to once again sit out of the exchanges in 2017. Until the offerings get more affordable and more attractive to the younger, healthier, more affluent patients who you have to get in the market to stabilize, they're going to continue to sit it out, he predicts. Howard considers that to be a political time bomb for the Obama administration, which people are not focusing on enough. The plans just aren't things that people want to buy with their own money, he says.
Ed Halesmeyer, Senior Research Fellow in Health Policy Studies for the Heritage Foundation, says Aetna's announcement was particularly important because among the large insurers, that provider has been the most disciplined and cautious in its approach to the Obamacare exchanges. They were willing to be on more exchanges than anybody else, but they insisted on charging premiums they felt were enough to cover their costs, and they still lost money, he notes. So when an insurer that's being thorough and cautious pulls out, that tells you something's really amiss, he said. Meanwhile, which company will now have the biggest presence on the exchanges?
With United and Aetna pulling back, and even Humana, the largest presence will almost certainly be Anthem, and that's because Anthem is really a collection of 14 Blue Cross plans, almost all of which are statewide Blue Cross, Halesmeyer explains. For example, Anthem is Blue Cross in Georgia and is Blue Cross plan in almost all of Missouri, except for the area around Kansas City. So Anthem will most certainly be the largest footprint.
You have heard about all the unrest this week in Milwaukee. You haven't heard it explained in plain English with no media bias. With the help of OneNewsNow.com and Abe Hamilton, an attorney for the American Family Association, we'll now give you the true story straight out of the box. Hamilton, who was raised in the inner city, says the rioting in Milwaukee after a black suspect was shot and killed comes from people seeking vengeance. The killing of Seville Smith on August 13th was reportedly caught on a police body camera, showing that Smith was armed with a handgun at a traffic stop when he was killed by a black police officer.
Despite the evidence of a firearm and video footage, protesters burned down businesses and fought police officers in the city's north side, which is majority black. In the inner city of Milwaukee and in other cities, the people want vengeance for what they perceive as them getting the short end of the stick for any number of reasons, observes Hamilton. Hamilton, who is black, was raised in inner city New Orleans. He recalls teachers advising him he would never succeed because white people would hold him back. Yet he has served as an assistant district attorney in Houston, Texas, and New Orleans before joining AFA, headquartered in Tupelo, Mississippi. Some of the blame can be attributed to a liberal political ideology that Hamilton says has gripped the inner cities of this country. You find that more than often they have deplorable economic conditions, he observes.
One other thing you find is that they are normally run by Democrat leaders on the political spectrum, all of whom employ the same old secular progressive Marxist policies that result in literally enslaving inner city residents to the government plantation, he said. Milwaukee is led by Mayor Tom Barrett, a Democrat. The city of 600,000 has been led by a Democratic mayor since 1908, and other mayors of the city have been open socialists. President Obama continues to expand the ever-welfare state, Hamilton says, which is like a narcotic to those who are dependent on it.
A Middle East expert says it's easy to understand why Donald Trump is taking his presidential campaign to Israel. On Monday, the Republican Party launched its first-ever election campaign in Israel to court American-Israeli dual citizens for Donald Trump.
In 2012, approximately 100,000 Israelis voted in the presidential election, with some 85% voting Republican. There are potentially 400,000 eligible voters in the country. New York-born David Rubin, the former mayor of the Israeli city of Shiloh, intends to vote for Trump in November. He says Israeli-American Jews are not like their American Jewish counterparts. American Jews tend to vote on issues that have nothing to do with Israel, he says. says Israel is only perhaps a tertiary issue at best for American Jews, he said. For American Israeli dual citizens, however, Israel is number one on our radar because we live here, he adds. The choice for American Israeli Jews is quite clear, he argues, because Trump supports Jerusalem as Israel's capital and supports moving the American embassy to Israel's capital, Jerusalem.
Trump supports the right of Israelis to live in Jerusalem. Hillary Clinton opposes that, Rubin says. He supports the right of Israelis to build in Judea and Samaria, Israel's biblical heartland, the so-called West Bank. Hillary is against that. Trump also opposes the Iran nuclear deal that Clinton continues to support.
She was court-martialed after refusing to remove a Bible verse she had posted in her work cubicle. Now the former Marine is hopeful the Supreme Court will hear her case. Last week, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces, or CAAF, upheld the court-martial and dismissal from the service of former Marine Lance Corporal Monifa Sterling, who continued to post a Bible verse at her desk, despite orders from a superior to take it down. Sterling's attorney, Mike Berry of First Liberty Institute, says the court rejected her argument that her faith was protected by the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or RFRA.
In the military, a court-martial means you're being prosecuted for a federal crime, he explains. And so she now has this federal criminal conviction on her record for not removing a Bible verse when she was ordered to do so. The CAAF and the RFRA didn't apply in Sterling's case, the United States versus Sterling, because the sharing of Bible verses doesn't constitute religious exercise as a part of a religious belief system. Barry says the decision itself is a very poor decision, adding that we believe the court made many errors. And that's why we plan on asking the Supreme Court to review this case. Daniel Bloomberg is a legal counsel for the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, which filed an amicus brief in the case.
Like Barry, he believes the decision sets a bad precedent, one that's very dangerous for other service members. These are the men and women who we send into harm's way to protect our liberty, and because of the court's ruling, their ability to protect their liberties and their most fundamental liberty, religious liberty, is going to be at risk. That's not the way things should be, he states. Ron Cruz and the Chaplain Alliance for Religious Liberty also filed an amicus brief on behalf of Sterling and her legal fight. Cruz calls the matter a critical case for other military personnel who may face similar scrutiny about wanting to live out their faith in today's military. As Barry states, our Marines give up many freedoms when serving, but religious freedom is never one of them. And that wraps up this segment of News Out of the Box Weekend Edition on Breadbox Media. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Welcome back to News Out of the Box Weekend Edition on Breadbox Media. I'm Joe Lerza.
And I'm Kelly Sergenis. Another report that links taking acetaminophen, also known by its shelf name as Tylenol, while pregnant, could cause behavior problems in children. And that may leave some pregnant women wondering whether they should use the pain reliever at all. The study published this week adds to a list of reports that associate the medication with children's ADHD, autism symptoms, delayed language skills, and asthma.
Acetaminophen is the main ingredient in Tylenol and many other pain medicines. It's often one of the only pain relievers doctors recommend to pregnant women for pain or fever. It's long been viewed as safe during pregnancy and is used by a large number of pregnant women in the U.S. and abroad. Experts are divided on the strength of the studies linking the medication to behavioral problems. None of them proved that the medication caused any of the health problems. They only showed an association. And untreated pain or fever in pregnancy can also carry risks to an unborn child. Hal Lawrence, MD, the CEO and Executive Vice President of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, says the studies show no clear evidence that proves a direct relationship between the prudent use of acetaminophen during any trimester and developmental issues in children. But researcher John Thompson, PhD, Associate Professor of Pediatrics at the University of Auckland, which is in Australia, says evidence appears to be building linking acetaminophen and behavior problems.
In a 2014 study of 871 children, Thompson linked acetaminophen to ADHD symptoms in children ages 7 and 11. Thompson says more study is still needed, but the results are consistent. I would say we have evidence acetaminophen use is linked to behavioral difficulties, says Evie Sturgiakouli, a lecturer in genetic epidemiology at the University of Bristol in the UK and a leader of the recent study. However, we should point out that the increased risk is quite small. That is a very important point. She points out that the study had limitations. It didn't look at how much acetaminophen the women took or for how long. The women also did not report why they used acetaminophen. Sturgiakouli can't explain the link, but she says that some evidence from animal studies suggests the medications might lead to abnormal brain development.
Researchers found the strongest links to behavioral problems when acetaminophen was taken during the third trimester, a period of active brain development and growth. The Consumer Health Products Association, CHPA, which represents manufacturers and marketers of over-the-counter medicines, pointed out that the study has many limitations and found only associations. Several previous studies have focused on acetaminophen in pregnancy and later risks to children. Among the findings, children whose mothers took acetaminophen during pregnancy were about 1.3 times more likely to be taking ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, medications, or have ADHD-like behaviors at age 7. Children born to women who had taken acetaminophen during pregnancy were about 1.4 times more likely to have hyperactivity and impulsivity symptoms than those whose mothers did not, according to Spanish researchers who followed more than 2,600 mother-child pairs for 5 years. They also found the boys had more symptoms of autism if their mothers took acetaminophen during pregnancy.
The study did look at the frequency of acetaminophen use and found higher risk with more use. A study released this year of more than 53,000 children in Norway showed a link between acetaminophen use in pregnancy and childhood asthma, although it didn't look at the amount of acetaminophen taken. Study authors found acetaminophen use for colds, flu, fever, and pain in pregnancy all showed a modest association with asthma in 3- and 7-year-olds. But the study found untreated pain was also associated with an increase in asthma. All those studies relied on women to report their acetaminophen use. The data seemed to at least point to a correlation or a link, says Rebecca Hoover, PharmD, assistant professor of pharmacy at Idaho State University, who led the study about ADHD behaviors at age 7. But, she adds, I think there is not enough evidence there to change practice. I would no longer say it's 100% safe, but nothing is 100% safe.
For years, one of the most loathed word combinations in the long history of the grape was boxed wine, and for good reason. For decades, poor quality wine, labeled simply as white or red, was relegated to these boxes and sold in supermarkets at bargain basement prices. But things have changed in recent years. Boxed wines, once the lowest level of the quality pyramid, are finally getting some respect, and they're becoming increasingly popular among consumers.
Danny Brager, Nielsen Company's Senior Vice President of Beverage Alcohol Practice, confirmed their newfound popularity at the 2016 Wine Market Council. While 750-milligram glass bottles solidly hold the market share, 3-liter boxes grew 13.7% and 12.3% in value and volume, respectively, while Tetra, only 1% of the market, grew 21.9% and 21.8%. Boxed wine originated in Australia in the 1930s, but it wasn't until the 1960s that Penfolds, one of Australia's oldest wineries, patented the plastic airtight tap attached to a bladder, which closely resembles today's packaging. This method was preferred for lesser quality wines that didn't warrant the cost of a bottle. But ironically, sales of value-boxed wines are stagnant now. The growth spurt is being driven primarily by premium wines. In the case of 3-liter boxes, Brager said, the category has increased sales by introducing new buyers, including premium wine buyers, accounting for 44% of the growth. And while women are more reluctant than men to select a boxed wine, that is changing too.
A wine's packaging garners different reactions from men and women, Brager said, with the latter group generally associating boxes with lower quality, although this is changing at a rapid rate, he said. In 2005, black box wines kicked off the boxed wine revolution by packaging premium, appellation-specific, vintage-dated wines in its signature black box. The company now boasts a wide array of award-winning varietal wines and blends that it says cost approximately 40% less than a comparable amount of wine sold in bottles. The reduced packaging, production, and transportation costs are being passed on to consumers, and they're taking note. Another savings feature is that the plastic bladder used to package the wine prevents oxygen from coming into contact with it, preserving it for up to 6 weeks after the container is opened and eliminating the pressure to finish a whole bottle in one night.
Another reason consumers are gravitating toward boxed wines is that they're friendlier to the environment. Though a standard 3-liter box holds the equivalent of 4 750-milliliter glass bottles, boxed wines have roughly half the carbon footprint of bottled wines. Also, most boxed wine packaging is renewable, recyclable, and biodegradable, making it much more desirable among environmentally aware wine drinkers. These products were created to minimize the carbon footprint in the wine world and to certainly bring value, convenience, and ecology to the consumer, said Jean-Charles Boisset of California's Boisset Family Estates, an early adopter of alternative methods of wine packaging for its barrel-to-barrel program and Tetra Pak products. Boxed wine packaging also eliminates the possibility of corked wine, which is definitely worth considering, since 3 to 8% of all wine with cork closures will be ruined every year. But despite all its advantages, boxed wine does have its limitations. At best, the packaging keeps wine fresh for only a year, so it's not a good option for fine wines that are meant to improve with age.
Boxes are a great fit for wines that are meant to be consumed immediately, while they are young and fresh. Also, while boxed wine is heading in the right direction, not all boxes contain good wine. If you're looking for quality, the brands you enjoyed in college are most likely worth avoiding. Brands to look for include Black Box, Fisheye, Banrock Station, and Bota Box from California, French Rabbit and La Petite Frog from France, and Maipé from Chile. Boxed wines that carry a vintage date, the name of a grape variety and or specific appellation, are also a good place to start. From there, let your palate be your guide. For casual, everyday drinking and get-togethers, given the advantages in cost, convenience, and environmental friendliness, there are compelling reasons to embrace the box. So the trend will most likely continue. But if you decide to tote a box of wine along to your next event, be prepared to offer a little wine education when you get there.
As Catholics, we already believe this, but sometimes it's great to hear that science corroborates our beliefs. In a large-scale study of more than 2,000 people, British researchers confirmed that thoughts do carry on after the heart stops. The shock research has also uncovered the most convincing evidence of an out-of-body experience for a patient declared dead. It had been believed the brain stopped all activity 30 seconds after the heart had stopped pumping blood around the body, and with that, awareness ceases too.
However, the study from the University of Southampton shows people still experience awareness for up to 3 minutes after they had been pronounced dead. Lead researcher Dr. Sam Parnia said, contrary to perception, death is not a specific moment, but a potentially reversible process that occurs after any severe illness or accident causes the heart, lungs, and brain to cease functioning. If attempts are made to reverse this process, it is referred to as cardiac arrest. However, if these attempts do not succeed, it's called death, he said. Of the 2,060 patients from Austria, the U.S., and the U.K. interviewed for the study who had survived cardiac arrest, almost 40% said they recall some form of awareness after being pronounced clinically dead. Dr. Parnia continued, this suggests more people may have mental activity initially, but then lose their memories after recovery, either due to the effects of brain injury or sedative drugs on memory recall. Of those who said they had experienced some awareness, just 2% said their experience was consistent with the feeling of an outer body experience, where one feels almost completely aware and can hear and see what's going on around them after death. Almost half of the respondents said the experience was not of awareness, but rather of fear. However, the most significant finding of the study is that of a 57-year-old man who is perhaps the first confirmed outer-body experience in a patient. The man was able to recall with eerie accuracy what was going on around him after he had died temporarily.
Dr. Parnia continued, this is significant since it has often been assumed that experiences in relation to death are likely hallucinations or illusions occurring either before the heart stops or after the heart has been successfully restarted, but not an experience corresponding with real events when the heart isn't beating. In this case, consciousness and awareness appeared to occur during a 3-minute period when there was no heartbeat. This is paradoxical since the brain typically ceases functioning within 20 to 30 seconds of the heart stopping and doesn't resume again until the heart has been restarted. Furthermore, the detailed recollections of visual awareness in this case were consistent with verified events.
Do you take a vitamin B12 supplement? After checking with your doctor to make sure it's okay, you probably should. Vitamin B12 is a water-soluble vitamin that has been shown to have a variety of healthy effects on the body. It helps maintain proper neurological function, red blood cell formation, and DNA synthesis. According to Healthline, the symptoms of a vitamin B12 deficiency include muscle weakness, fatigue, muscle stiffness, shakiness, muscle spasticity, low blood pressure, mood disturbances, and incontinence.
They also explain that individuals who have celiac disease, Crohn's disease, drink alcohol regularly, have an immune dysfunction, or take prescription antacids are at an increased risk for vitamin B12 deficiency. You can take vitamin B12 in supplement form or get it from foods, meat, eggs, shellfish, cheese, and fish, just to name a few. The recommended intake for individuals 14 years and older is 2.4 micrograms daily. For pregnant women, 2.6 micrograms daily, and 2.8 micrograms daily for breastfeeding females, according to the Mayo Clinic. There are several health benefits of vitamin B12. First, vitamin B12 has been shown to help with the proper functioning of the digestive system. According to research, it helps you move energy obtained from food into the tissue cells where it is needed. Next, B12 is essential in maintaining healthy nerve cells. According to the University of Maryland Medical Center, it helps the productions of RNA and DNA. It also works closely with vitamin B9 to help make red blood cells and help iron work better in the body. According to research, data has suggested that vitamin B12 may play a role in treating non-small cell lung cancer. Increased intake of vitamin B12, vitamin B6, and folate may also help reduce the risk for breast cancer and cervical cancer.
Next, B12 promotes healthy skin. If you are suffering from an unhealthy complexion or extreme skin issues, this is a sign you may have a vitamin B12 deficiency. This vitamin has been shown to help improve the moisture of your skin, treat eczema, and even heal damaged skin. It also helps with fatigue. Vitamin B12 has been shown to help boost energy levels. It helps you feel alert and awake. And finally, vitamin B12 helps prevent Alzheimer's disease. If you or a family member fear that you may one day come down with symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, it may be wise to consider taking vitamin B12. Studies have shown that it may help treat and also prevent the occurrence of the disease. And that wraps up this segment of News Out of the Box Weekend Edition right here on Breadbox Media. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Welcome back to News Out of the Box Weekend Edition on Breadbox Media. I'm Joe Lerza.
And I'm Kelly Sergenis. If you love bananas, you better buy all the bunches you can, because the sweet yellow fruit you know and love might be extinct within the next 5 to 10 years. According to plant pathologist Yannis Stergiopoulos, a fast-advancing plant fungus could be a lethal threat to the world's banana supply. There are a complex of 3 fungi attacking bananas, but the black stigatoga poses the greatest risk to the 100 million tons of bananas grown annually in almost 120 countries.
Mr. Stergiopoulos pointed out Cavendish bananas, the most commonly found in the supermarket, are grown from shoot cuttings, which means a disease capable of wiping out one plant could destroy them all. The Cavendish banana plants all originated from one plant, and so as clones, they all have the same genotype, and that is a recipe for disaster, he said. Mr. Stergiopoulos suggested the ready availability of bananas gives them an image problem because consumers think the supply will never cease to exist. In order to prevent the global banana industry from being wiped out in the next decade, farmers will need to make 50 fungicide applications to their banana crops annually. Despite the negative outlook, there is the possibility scientists can create a defense against the complex. In 2001, Australia's largest banana production area, Tully, in far north Queensland, was close to extinction after black stigatoga was discovered.
In 2003, a team of scientists confirmed a world first had been completed, with the black stigatoga being completely eradicated. So all is not lost for our beloved bananas. We have to trust that modern science will come through in the clutch.
With my kids grown and now in their 20s and 30s, I came across an envelope that the Tooth Fairy dropped off one day several years ago. In the envelope were nearly all the baby teeth my 3 kids dropped when they were little. In relation to this story, the fact that they're mixed up together is not so good. What is good is that doctors are urging parents everywhere to keep their kids' baby teeth. A study in 2003 showed that baby teeth are a rich source of stem cells, which are like protocells that can be grown into multiple kinds of cells if needed. That means that if later in life a child needs replacement tissue for whatever reason, the stem cells from their baby teeth can be used to grow the needed tissue. Pretty amazing.
Potentially, the practice of storing baby teeth could save lives and treat a variety of ailments. Losing baby teeth, or deciduous teeth as they're properly known, is a rite of passage for kids everywhere. Most of us can remember that first little wiggle that let us know a change was coming, and then the weird absence of a tooth when it finally fell out. But what we remember the most? The promise of a cash reward courtesy of the Tooth Fairy. The Tooth Fairy tradition actually goes back pretty far, and some link it back to an old Norse cultural myth, where baby teeth were considered good luck. Other cultures around the world also have specific traditions involving baby teeth. As it turns out, baby teeth really can bring good fortune, but it's less the magical kind and more the medicinal kind, although modern medicine is pretty amazing. In 2003, a study determined that baby teeth contain stem cells and that if preserved quickly after falling out, the stem cells can be stored for years and kept in case of later medical problems in life. So if you thought getting a dime, that was their going rate back then, for your tooth was cool, then getting the chance to grow any kind of tissue, from heart cells to brain cells and repair damaged tissue, is really cool.
But there's one catch. The baby teeth have to be kept fresh. Like anything, stem cells degrade and lose their potency over time. So simply keeping your child's baby teeth in a box isn't going to cut it. Instead, parents can use services like Store-A-Tooth to properly preserve their children's teeth. The teeth are placed in a liquid nitrogen cryopreservation vault, where the stem cells will remain intact and usable for years. If later in life the child, who may be an adult at this point, needs their stem cells, the teeth are taken out of storage and shipped to their doctor. It seems like all the cultures that had superstitions about the power of baby teeth were, in a strange way, actually onto something. If you'd like to know more about storing baby teeth for your kids or grandkids, check out Storatooth for more information. Be sure to share this important information with anyone you know who might be helping out the Tooth Fairy soon.
We've already brought you a couple of stories about exciting new cures that are on the not-too-distant horizon. We have talked about new treatments for cancer, some exciting Alzheimer's research, among others. Another area of research that is as exciting as it is effective is adult stem cell research. Adult stem cell research differs from embryonic stem cell research in one important way. Nothing has to die in order to begin the treatment. Just by the nature of embryonic stem cell research, human embryos must die in order to complete the cell transplants.
And the story you are not hearing in the mainstream media is that despite the multiple millions of dollars spent on embryonic stem cell research, there has not been one single cure because of one thing. Embryonic stem cells grow fast, so fast that they grow into malignant tumors. Embryonic stem cell research is a big dead end. Meanwhile, adult stem cells have already been successful in over 70 cures, which brings us to this story. While scientists continue to rake in federal dollars to experiment with the dead science of human embryo research, a website has been set up to prove that an ethical alternative is a better form of research. The Charlotte Lozier Institute has set up stemcellresearchfacts.org, again, that's stemcellresearchfacts.org, in order to share the facts about use of adult stem cells and the diseases already being treated with it. Dr. David Prentice, vice president of the Charlotte Lozier Institute, tells One News Now that a lot of people, about half of whom are physicians, aren't aware that adult stem cells are successfully treating patients. And this is a patient-friendly and life-friendly type of treatment that everybody ought to know about, he says. There are now conditions being treated with adult stem cells that just a few years ago we would have considered incurable, he said. That fact raises the question of why so much money is devoted to researching human embryos. Prentice points out the investments thus far haven't returned much benefit.
The embryonic cells haven't successfully treated anybody in over a decade of trying and pouring lots of money on it, he says. With adult stem cells, you don't have to kill or harm the stem cell donor. In about half the cases, the patient can use their own adult stem cells. Those cells have successfully treated forms of cancer, heart disease, and diabetes, and the future holds great promise for additional treatments, according to Prentice. Adult stem cells are one of the best-kept secrets in medicine today, he concludes. The validated science can no longer be denied. Which leads us to this next story.
More than 500 million people around the world are either visually impaired or blind. But thanks to a technique developed by a team of Japanese scientists at Osaka University, there may be hope for a new treatment. The breakthrough, published in the journal Advanced Healthcare Material, demonstrates their success in growing a key part of the eye in a petri dish, the cornea.
Inside of your eye is a highly organized and complex system composed of three basic layers that have an important function needed for visual processing, including the cornea as the outermost layer. These cells deteriorate with age, which is why figuring out how to regenerate CECs is the key to maintaining functional eyesight. All researchers need is a small sample of skin to regenerate corneal endothelial cells, which are responsible for keeping the window of the eye clear and preventing it from swelling. After growing CECs, which are adult stem cells, in a petri dish over the course of several weeks, researchers implanted them in sheep that were born without corneas. The sheep's vision was restored to 98%. After 28 days, the sheep's eyes didn't reject the CECs or become inflamed, proving to the team their lab-grown corneas were near identical to that of one naturally grown. They have yet to implant them into humans, but once they do, it may open up a huge door for the visually impaired, who are in need of medical procedure to regain their eyesight. For years, we didn't have anything to offer these patients. We'd transplant a cornea, it would work for a few weeks, and then the blindness would return. It's devastating, Dr. Edward Holland, director of cornea services at the Cincinnati Eye Institute, who was not involved in this study, said in an interview.
This takes the stem cell procedure to another level, giving us more options to offer patients. In preliminary trials earlier this year in March of 2016, the same research team grew sheaths of corneas for rabbits. Sheets of petri-grown corneas were implanted into the eyes of blind bunnies. Once the stem cells took hold of the rest of the rabbit's eyes, their eyesight was completely restored, and researchers published their findings in the journal Nature. Beyond corneas, researchers hope to grow retinas, lenses, and other key components of the eye for those who were born with or developed visual impairment. And that wraps up this segment of News Out of the Box Weekend Edition on BreadBox Media. We'll be right back.
You are listening to BreadBox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. BreadBox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Welcome back to News Out of the Box Weekend Edition on BreadBox Media. I'm Joe Lerza.
And I'm Kelly Sergenis. Have you heard of purslane? Most people consider this weed useless and end up pulling it up. However, there's more to purslane than you might think. It actually has amazing health benefits. Since this is radio and I cannot show it to you, simply do an internet search for purslane. P-U-R-S-L-A-N-E. It's got small green waxy leaves with a reddish stem.
It's a weed that probably grows all over your yard, and you never knew the health benefits it has until now. It turns out that purslane is high in vitamins and minerals. This not only can boost overall health, but the high amounts of iron and calcium that it contains will help to support bone health. The plant can actually live 25 years. The seeds are very strong and can have excellent benefits on the immune system. Purslane has the most vitamin A per serving, even more so than all leafy green veggies. It also has those healthy omega-3 fatty acids known to prevent heart disease and stroke, and it's GMO-free as well. So why not include this in your regular diet by replacing it once in a while with spinach and including it in other recipes?
You can put it in salads and sandwiches as well. Purslane can boost your energy while reducing the risk of developmental disorders in children, such as autism and ADHD. Who would have known this weed had so many benefits?
You will rarely see a Disneyland cast member out of character. Their job is to make every park visitor's Disney experience feel real and magical. So when one of the park's most beloved princesses is moved to tears by the people she's supposed to entertain, you know it's something special. Enter the 45th African Children's Choir, a singing group of underprivileged children from Uganda that tours the United States raising awareness of the problems in Africa.
During a recent trip to Disneyland in Anaheim, California, the choir surprised Belle from Beauty and the Beast with an impromptu a cappella performance at a meet and greet session. The surprise was so touching that the Disney princess broke out of character for only a moment, of course, and shed tears of joy. Other cast members, as seen in the video, were equally astonished. Belle cried, and she wasn't the only one that cried. Lydia Sherwood, a spokeswoman for the choir, told the Huffington Post, "They were amazed at how well the children sang with confidence, joy, and beautiful harmonies." The choir visited Disneyland during a day off from touring California. The children in the choir have faced numerous difficulties in their lives, ranging from being orphaned to struggling with poverty, war, and famine. They represent all the children of a continent, and they demonstrate the potential of African children to become strong leaders for a better future in their land, the choir website says.
Money raised by the group's U.S. tour goes to each individual choir member's education back in Africa, as well as to a nonprofit organization, Music for Life, which aims to improve the lives and education of underprivileged African communities. As the choir's unexpected concert proved, its members' saintly voices are just as uplifting as their mission.
Ever since Deborah Skousen came home with a pink flowered shirt for her daughter 5 years ago, Cammie, who has autism, has been fixated on it. It quickly became her favorite piece of clothing, leading Skousen to scour eBay each time her daughter's current shirt became unwearable.
But the fifth time she sought a replacement, eBay stock had run dry. That's when the Utah mom turned to Facebook, asking friends to share her request for the shirt, along with her offer to pay whatever it costs, plus shipping. "It has to be this exact shirt," Skousen wrote on August 7th. "We've tried similar shirts, and they don't cut it with Cammie. As of this week, no less than 150 matching shirts have arrived at her door from as far away as Germany," reports the Daily Dot. "At first, my daughter was a little confused to see more than one of her pink-flowered shirts. I explained to her that people gave them to her because they loved her," says Skousen, a special education teacher, noting people have offered to make teddy bears, pillows, and blankets for her 10-year-old out of any extra shirts.
She adds she tearfully accepted an offer from Target, which sells the Serco brand item, and heard about the story, to make larger versions of the shirt so Cammie can wear it even when she's an adult. "It's been very, very touching," Skousen tells KUTV. "These are all total strangers," she wrote on Facebook. "People are inherently good and kind, and I'm glad I've been able to be a recipient of that kindness."
If kindness were a pop quiz, then this man would pass with flying colors. A man in Texas bought $97 of school supplies for a teacher at Walmart. Lester Brown noticed Sabrina Drood, a teacher at Francis Scobie Middle School in San Antonio, at a register with a ton of school supplies and no children. So he got behind her in line and struck up a conversation. "He started asking me why I was buying all the supplies," Drood told the Huffington Post, "which is when I explained that I was a teacher who teaches in a low socioeconomic area and would rather have my students focus on learning than worry about their supplies."
Brown then bought all of Drood's supplies for her, which included bins, notebooks, pencil boxes, scissors, pencils, markers, and colored pencils. "I remember I had this $100 bill with the intention of responding to something in need, and God said to respond." Brown, a pastor, father of five, and reentry specialist for the Texas Juvenile Justice Department, told WLTX, "The kind act made Drood emotional. I told him it was unnecessary and started to cry," she told the Huffington Post. "He said that teachers do too much and don't receive recognition. I asked if I could hug him and take a photo with him because I didn't think anyone would believe this happened." Overwhelmed by the selfless act, Drood left the store before asking Brown for his name. She told the Huffington Post she wanted to send him a thank you note and letters from her students for the supplies. Drood took to social media in hopes of tracking Brown down, posting about the experience on Facebook and Reddit. Eventually, someone posted one of Drood's posts to Love What Matters Facebook page, and Brown responded, "It's important that people who are trusted to empower kids are loved and appreciated for their effort," Brown wrote in his Facebook comment. "Some of the greatest lessons I have learned that are central to my life came from outstanding teachers and coaches."
Local outlet KENS5 saw the comment and put Drood in touch with Brown, Drood said. Drood told the Huffington Post that she and Brown have been talking ever since, and she hopes he can meet her students in person and perhaps have a pizza party. Drood hopes Brown's good deed shed some light on the efforts of teachers. "I'm not a rare example," she told the Huffington Post. "Almost every teacher I know spends hundreds, if not thousands, each year on their classes." Brown, on the other hand, challenges people to follow his lead, telling WLTX, "I challenge you, whatever it is you can afford to volunteer at a school, help a family."
There are new trends that are quickly reshaping the fast food industry. The first is more healthy food. Whether it's cage-free chickens or all-white meat nuggets, or that yummy Asian salad, healthier food at the major fast food restaurants is a big hit.
And then there's an interesting thing happening at the grocery store that is hurting sales at fast food restaurants. Grocery prices are coming down. You can cook a meal at home for way less than it costs for a meal at a fast food restaurant. That's your Breadbox Media News Out of the Box Weekend Edition. On behalf of Kelly Sergenis, I'm Joe Lerza, reminding you to always think out of the box.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.